He's about to speak.
They always play well against us. I mean, they always do. The games that I've coached against Arkansas, they play well. They're a terrific shooting team from the three, from the two, from the free throw line. They're scrambling their defense. They're playing some 2-3 zone. They're still, you know, pressing and trapping and scrambling, sometimes trap, switch pick and rolls. Doesn't matter who it is. They're playing. I mean, I think the Texas A&M game was a little bit of a anomaly, but, you know, what I saw in the Florida tape, you know, they're a terrific team.
I don't know if John Calipari has been spending his time exclusively in Colorado since they approved.
Private jets recruiting, maybe.
The weed. I don't know what the deal is with him. And maybe he thinks he's playing Kansas tonight and not Arkansas. But I don't know what he's been watching. I don't know who he thinks has been shooting it well. And I don't know how he considers the A&M game. It's not an anomaly if you do it two games in a row. So, anyway, maybe I don't understand the meaning of that word, but I think I do. Jim Harris of SportingLifeArkansas.com joining us now. And, Jim, I'm about as depressed as I have been in the Mike Anderson era, and I did not expect to feel this way two games into the SEC slate.
Yeah, and just listening to Calipari, that's typical coach speak before a game. You don't give them a bit of bulletin board material. At least the smart coaches don't, football and basketball. You don't want to give them any bulletin board material because Arkansas is...
you don't want to get Arkansas mad at you, man. You don't want to get Arkansas fired up at you.
You don't want to get Arkansas fired up at you at Fayetteville. Of course, you know, there's reason to be disappointed, Justin. I can understand that, and I gathered that from, you know, reading Twitter Saturday night and, you know, some of the comments that... The whole thing about the Florida game is it was a loss that probably everybody contributed to from, you know, with some mistakes here and there from coach on down. And it just kind of, I'm sure he was kicking himself a few times. There were some personnel decisions on the court that were real head scratchers. Of course, there was, you know, blown dunks again, you know, a key rebound miss that you knew, you know, when Cody missed that follow shot, that was going to be a factor. I mean, I just knew that it was going to come down to, like, those 2 points, as it turned out. The team is kind of – there's a couple of positions that are costing them, Justin. There's Michael Qualls is struggling, 2-6-3, 4-22 in the SEC. One of those makes, of course, his only three-pointer was made when the game was basically over in the last second the other day. So he's struggling. The other, it looks like we've gotten into a consistent pattern where Fred Gulley and Kiko Hadar are alternating at one of the guard spots. They're sort of occupying that position opposite Kai Madden, who was fabulous.
Yeah,
Saturday. I mean, that was the Kai Madden that, you know, we kind of thought about when he was being recruited and one of the top 50 players in the country. Just back to Kiko and Fred. Let's face it, they're walk-ons on the team, and they're occupying a top spot, and they compete hard and all that, but they gave them almost nothing offensively Saturday. So you got two positions on the floor out of the five that are not quite coming through right now.
Right. Well, and then you look at a guy like Kingsley, who has disappeared since SEC play began as well, and I'm a little disappointed. I guess, you know, you can attribute some of that to being a freshman, but – you know, Portis has not played well either, but at least he's playing hard and looks somewhat comfortable. Kingsley looks scared to death. It is deer in the headlights right now for him, and I can't figure that out.
I guess he does, but he had 4 rebounds the other day, and he got, I can't remember the minutes. What, he had 6?
I think he had 9.
Okay.
Not much.
You know, he had 4 rebounds. He did get the ball stolen out in the front, which led to a layup on the other end. But what was he doing out front anyway? Why is Kingsley on offense out at the top of the key.
The bigger question I have is, why is Portis not in the game at the end of the game? And I'm not one to second-guess coaches. I assume
right.
that, you know, Coach A knows a lot more than I do. I don't assume that. I know that. But was there any explanation given? I asked Wally about this the other day, and I asked a couple other guys. Nobody really got a good answer. What was the point of not having him on the floor late? While he's struggling offensively, he does give you a presence defensively, certainly, and he's the only guy, or at least he's the best option from what I've seen from an offensive rebounding standpoint, although Clark had, I think, one more the other night.
Yeah, I guess they did put him in when Harris was at the line, and he did have a chance almost to get a fingertip on the last shot by Scotty Wilbekin that tied the game. But yeah, he was not in the game in the possessions that I guess two or three possessions or off, you know, Bates' team in that last minute and a half or so. No, it wasn't addressed. Coach's decision, and in fact there was that front line one time down that was all, you know, 6'6" or less,
yeah,
against their front line, which was what, 6'9", 6'10". It just looked kind of, I mean, you know, they survived one possession. I think they got a travel call. I guess you could look back and say, well, the right guys were on the court on that one possession against Florida. And then again, substitution-wise, why not have Bell and Wade on the court at least to get the ball, you know, get an inbounds pass, because you know you're going to get fouled.
Bell's another guy, Jim, that looked, and again, he's been streaky throughout the non-conference, but he's a guy that has shown the ability to put up and make 4, 5, 6 threes in a game. What's going on with him? Any idea?
Well,
Have they talked about
it? I don't know. Who's he ever really done that against? It's a big question. It's kind of like,
I'd have to look at it from last year, I guess.
Yeah,
but.
Well, look, he did have a great game, I think it was LSU or somebody, and then they didn't even play him the next game. Or it may have been Georgia that he had a great game here, you know, and showed that he could hit the three. And then he didn't even use hardly at all in the LSU loss the following game. It's been strange. I mean, that's the personnel issues you kind of scratch your head about. I don't know if Bell is slightly maybe overmatched by the SEC competition or not. It's kind of like when you see cornerbacks. I'll just use the football analogy. You see, you know, cornerbacks and safeties for Arkansas look pretty darn good against, you know, Louisiana Lafayette, who's the Sun Belt champion in football, but we're obviously overmatched when it got to SEC play. Now, I don't think SEC basketball is that, should be that much. You know, SEC
right.
basketball is not what SEC football is. There shouldn't be that much of an overmatch.
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers from this year, but here's some numbers from last year. Bell hit a three in 15 games last year. He hit multiple threes in 8 different games, and some of the better games he had, 5 threes, 5 of 7 against Georgia in February of last season. Had 17 points in that one. He was 4 of 6 from 3 against Delaware State, 4 of 10 against Florida when Florida was pretty good last season. So he has done it against some pretty good competition. So I just don't know what happened. I mean, he has sort of been a forgotten man this season. And
well, I don't know if he's the type of player who can just be stuck into the ball game for 5 minutes and then you hope he's hot. I mean, you know, it may be that it'd be nice if he was part of the starting lineup. If you started Madden and Bell with a bigger front line and give Bell a chance to be in the flow of the game. I mean, some guys, you could put an Al Dillard in the game at any time of the game, and he might come in and pop the three. There's some guys that need to feel the, you know, the flow and get into the flow, because you don't want to come into the game and thinking about your shot either. You just want to have it, get it, and shoot it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We don't see practice anymore. Man, sure. I remember when you used to be able to see practice all the time, you know, when no one was there and mm-hmm. Eddie before him. But, I mean, nobody sees practice, so you really got to go with what these coaches are seeing on the practice floor, and I know that Mike really feels strongly about playing an upperclassman and keep, you know, when the pressure's on. you know, that's why he likes Gully and Hynar and Ricky Scott, because they are the seniors. And you would hope you would have seen more out of, you know, Madrakas Wade, though, because he was a heck of a shooter 2 years ago.
Man, we were talking about that earlier. I don't know what happened to him either.
I don't know. I mean, he's a senior, too, I guess. And he should be contributing. He's got the size. He had the shot at one time. I think he's pretty doggone good on defense. I think he's bought into what they want on defense. I thought he played really well in his limited minutes against South Alabama, and that was after like a handful of games where he did not play a coach's decision. And somebody said the best license plate out there, DNP, you know, CD.
Yeah.
Did not play coach's decision. It's
this matchup seems a little more difficult to me than the Florida game. And maybe the Florida thing has to do with the fact that they had their best player out with injury, and Wilbekin allegedly wasn't 100%. He looked fine to me. But this just looks like on paper an extremely difficult game for them to overcome. And you know that Kentucky's battle-tested with the schedule they played, and they're not going to be the least bit intimidated coming to Fayetteville tonight, I wouldn't think.
Well, they're battle-tested, and they're getting a little bit better as a team. I don't know if they're as good a team as Florida, but they're definitely probably, I mean, obviously they should be as talented as anybody in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you got like seven McDonald's All-Americans, Arkansas is one.
That doesn't seem fair.
And, but I mean, you know, as far as talent, I mean, if it just comes down to talent, you would have to think Arkansas is up against the wall. But, you know, Arkansas at times this year, Here's what I really believe, and I said this in the column the other day, because we talked before the A&M game, and we felt like, you know, Arkansas should go down there and compete well, and they did for a while. But that schedule in December, Justin, I still contend that did nothing to prepare this team. All it did was, it was to build confidence across the board, maybe that's it. But you don't get better by playing the likes of, you know, High Point and Savannah State. I mean, you don't. You have to have a couple of those games thrown in there.
Right.
The way the schedule was set up, to have all those games in a row, those just basically in a row, except for Clemson, you had East Tennessee State, you had SEMO, you had all those teams kind of bunched together. Just to have that to run into the Southeastern Conference play, it's almost odd scheduling to me. It does not prepare you at all for getting out there, and all the games were in state other than the Maui trip. So Arkansas never went to an arena where the team is playing on its home floor with that kind of confidence, just like Arkansas typically does when it's at Bud Walton. So
we had this conversation last night. There's no upside to playing Arkansas. Their RPI is not very good, and if you're a team, there's not a whole lot of upside. But I'm sure that there are plenty of teams that would love to have them come in. And there are plenty of regional opponents that would make sense. And I don't know about going to Missouri State, but playing at Tulsa or even an Oral Roberts or somewhere like that, I guess, you know, there's no reason you couldn't play at Missouri State in that case for going to Oral Roberts. But there are plenty of regional games where it's a true road game. It would be an easy game to get to. You could even have some fans travel because it'd be an easy drive. I don't understand the deal there, too. But we have heard coaches talk in recent, you know, months and years about the difficulty of scheduling and how hard it is to come up with games, and I don't know how much they're willing to go on the road and eat, you know, a home gate. So I guess there's probably some financial ramifications too. But yeah, if you're trying to mentally prepare your team and you're not having a true road test until you get into conference play, it does seem a little crazy. So I mean, you look at Kentucky, and it's all by design, and certainly they're in a little different place as a program than Arkansas is right now, unfortunately. But you know, you're going to North Carolina. Obviously, you're playing, you know, teams like Louisville and others. So I mean, their schedule's fantastic. Anyway, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, I asked Jeff Long early on about the schedule, and he wouldn't go into any of it, really. But what somebody has pointed out was that it was a money deal again, you know. It's that if they went on the road, as you point out, that's even an 8,000 turnout gate that they don't get. I mean, you know, if they just go on the road. Now, I don't see why they can't, over the long haul, get a couple of more good home and home, you know, series with Kansas State. Kansas, Tulsa is down. You know, that's typically a I mean, that seems like who we see up on the UALR schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the time. But I remember in the national championship season, Arkansas went into Tulsa, and I think they won it in overtime. But it was you think about that, and that was a Tubby Smith Tulsa team. And then Arkansas ended up playing Tulsa again in the NCAA tournament the same year and blew them out, and, you know, on a neutral court. But that was big. I mean, you know, you get out there, and, of course, that team also went into Memphis and play. You know, Memphis won't play Arkansas anymore. So you just got to find some teams, but certainly there's some teams that would agree to, okay, I'll play you and Bud Walton, but you got to play me and, Fog Allen. I mean, whatever.
Right.
I don't have to think they could do that.
What about, let's shift gears here. I don't really want to belabor this game anymore. I just want it to be over, and hopefully they
win.
You're
really down.
I am. I'm depressed. I didn't expect him to be 0-2 at this point. I really didn't.
We're trying to lift him up, Jim. We're trying to.
Yeah, but what's bad is not that they make me Kentucky tonight. To me, what's bad is the next two games. They go on the road with no road presence, to Georgia, which is 2-0, which is kind of a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And Tennessee, which is even weirder in that Tennessee won at LSU by 18. What a win that was.
Mm-hmm.
And then goes home, and all we were was saying, Texas A&M, how could Arkansas lose to Texas A&M? And Texas A&M goes into, into Knoxville and wins by 2 points. I mean, it's been a strange start to the season, but Arkansas's staring at a possible 0-5, and nobody wants to hear that, but that's what they're looking at if they don't win tonight.
Jim, I think if they win tonight, they'll find a way to split on the road, and that becomes significant. You're going to have to split those games somehow and get back on.
It'll be the first time Arkansas's beaten anybody but Auburn in the SEC on the road in 4 years.
Well, the schedulers did them no favors. I would love to have them on the road this year. Unfortunately, they only play them once, and they're coming to Fayetteville. Jim, we have some breaking news we need to share. Just found this out. And there's been talk that there may be a move with a defensive coordinator at Arkansas. And apparently the move has been made. And I'm a little surprised that if I was an Ohio State fan this morning, I don't know that I'd be feeling that great. Chris Ash headed to Ohio State to take over the defensive coordinator position.
Co-defensive coordinator.
Co-defensive
and
coordinator.
And secondary coach.
I'd say, man, I can't trust you to do this on your own. I saw what you did at Arkansas last year. That seems a little odd, but there's been
April Fools?
No, but there's been conversation about him leaving for a while. The teams are interested in having him. I don't get it. But whatever. So now what happens? That becomes the question.
Oh, my gosh. That's the breaking news that kind of jolts your morning coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Kind of a little speechless for a second. that changes things. What does Arkansas do? And here's the deal. Excuse the Willie Robinson era, under Petrino. Other than that,
I can't
think of any defensive coordinator who in Arkansas, even in a bad year, even in a Jack Crow 3-8 year, who has survived to be the defensive coordinator again the following season in the modern history of Arkansas football. Even in Crow's first year, Joe Pate was the defensive coordinator. He didn't get booted. You know, he didn't take another job or get fired, but he basically had the DC taken away, and they hired Joe Kines. But, you know, when Bob Cope struggled as defensive coordinator 1 year, he was gone. You know, Holtz replaced him with Don Lindsay.
Go
down the list.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is for me, you've got an obvious replacement on staff. Now the question becomes, will he interview and go outside of his current staff? I mean, we've been saying since he got here that Randy Shannon's the most overqualified linebacker coach in America. Do they try to elevate him, which maybe would extend his life as an Arkansas assistant coach by a couple seasons?
I mean, it would seem
to be an obvious move to me. I don't know if it's an obvious move to him or if he's got somebody else in mind. Because there's been enough talk about Ash leaving over the last couple of weeks to have been just enough smoke that I got to think that Bielema started planning for what if. So I can't imagine it'll take long to get this sorted out.
Maybe it was already urged to go. I mean, with the smoke you were hearing.
Yeah, well, it's
maybe
if you're encouraging a guy to leave, though, clearly the guy is well thought of. I mean, you don't go to a place like Ohio State if you don't have a clue what's going on or you're not respected. I'm surprised,
right,
to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, you look
at interesting.
Ohio State secondary finished in 110th last year in passing yards allowed, 268 per game, one of the weakest in the Big Ten.
I only watched them play against Michigan State, and they looked pretty good defensively in that game, but
they
not quite good enough.
They reference Ash's time with Wisconsin being the 2012 season where the Badgers ranked 23rd nationally in pass defense. That's kind of, I think they're going more for that than the Arkansas secondary rankings last year.
Yeah, it's amazing how much more effective he was as a defensive coach when he was in the Big Ten than he was when he came to the SEC for a year. But, you know, admittedly, they had more talent at Wisconsin that year as well. So I don't know. That's but that is a little surprising to me.
Well, here's a great time to hire Ed Orgeron for $1 million.
Ain't no question.
Making your defensive coordinator.
And recruiting-wise.
Yeah, he would be a great recruiter. I don't know if you make him – maybe you could give him and Shannon co-defensive coordinator and pay him both $1 million. I'd be okay with that. Hey, you're paying an offensive line coach $500,000. What's $1 million, a couple $1 million
Ron,
more?
You're probably not paying him enough considering he is clearly the best recruiter on the staff, and that's where he's brought in the most ability of any guys who's still on the staff. You know, I'd say Partridge was right there.
Yeah,
having
that was a
brought
big
in Alex Collins. But I don't think they're paying Sam Pittman enough, to be honest. But it's a probably good opportunity now for Bielema at a and it could be that could tell us a little more about what was going on as far as his, defensive line hire from last week. I have to think he knew that Ash was getting out.
What's a buzz on the street? I haven't followed recruiting very closely. What's the story?
Well, they're going to need a really big push here in the last couple of weeks, but there's some key players. Certainly the changes at Louisville and Vanderbilt have open the door to some players Arkansas is really interested in defensively that could help them. And all this coaching carousels change a lot of things. Arkansas still needs to get that key linebacker commitment. I don't know if they, got that or not. Sharif Raheem would be a good one. He's supposed to be wanting to follow his teammate, Sean Shaw, who was committed to Louisville, was going to enroll early, but Charlie Strong leaving changed that. I thought it was interesting. Did you notice that Petrino said he wasn't going to honor a commitment that was taken by Charlie Strong from the number two fullback in the country, and he's out of Fort Worth, Texas?
That's odd. We'll take him.
Bobby doesn't want him.
That's really odd, isn't it? I mean, that was one of the beefs about Bobby was the, the relationships and doing things that hurt his relationships with Texas coaches. And,
I thought Bobby took anybody on offense. Now, if the kid was like a linebacker, I could see why he wouldn't want him.
Yeah, and he's a fullback, and Petrino used fullbacks too, but I don't know. Maybe whatever his background was that, Petrino, he didn't fit the Petrino mold. That's the thing. You got to get your own players a lot of times. And that's why everybody's still got to be patient with Bielema. And they're probably on, they only have 7 spots supposedly to fill here at Arkansas. But they're on enough people to fill those spots with good, talented players. I mean, they're in on some top players here at the very end, and it's going to take keep your fingers crossed. They have a few more Brian Wallaces to commit to them, like Pittman got.
They need to get Orgeron in there because Orgeron will just talk, and I think kids sign just because they can't understand what he's saying and they just want to get it over with. Fine, I'll sign.
He's an amazing recruiter. I don't know how he really does it because you're right. How do you even understand the guy?
Well, he's not intimidating, I guess. He makes the kids feel comfortable because I don't know what he's saying half the time. I like this guy. Jim, appreciate the time. 11:32, we got to take a timeout, but big news in Fayetteville. Chris
Ash.
Thanks
for having me, Justin.
You bet.
We'll visit again. Okay.
Oh, bye-bye. Real quick.
Yeah.
Hogs win or lose tonight?
They're going to win by two.
Woo!